It's 2 a.m. Welcome back to the 2 a.m. Book Review Club, where we stay up late talking about books or talk about books that made us stay up late. By the way, I am aware that my voice is still not back to 100%. I'm still getting over my illness, but we have an episode to record, so let's do this. It's June, which means that we are fully in beach season mode. And if I'm being completely honest here, I have never read a book at the beach. I love reading on vacation, but reading a book specifically at the beach kind of sounds like my worst nightmare, if I'm being honest here. The sun's in your eyes, sand is getting all over your book, and the wind is constantly trying to steal it. Reading at the beach just does not sound like my personal idea of a good time, but I know it's definitely a thing. People do actually read at the beach. And if you are the type of person who likes to read books at the beach, or if you just want some books to read this summer, then you're in luck, because I have compiled 3 separate beach read book lists, which I will be releasing every week over the month of June. This week, we'll be going over my general beach read book list with book recommendations for every type of reader, and then I'll also be releasing an episode about mystery books to read at the beach, as well as an episode about romance books to read at the beach. So definitely keep an eye out for those episodes as well. But today, I have 12 beach read / vacation read / summer book recommendations for every type of reader. And I have divided my ultimate beach read book list into 6 different categories. Category number 1, gossipy rich people drama. In many ways, I feel like a good, juicy, melodramatic story about rich people being self-destructive is the ultimate beach read book. And I have 2 books that fit perfectly into this category. Beach read book number 1 in our gossipy rich people drama category is Daisy Jones and the 6 by Taylor Jenkins Reid. But, and this is very important, I am not recommending the physical book, which is unusual for me since I almost always read either the ebook or the physical book. Let's be honest, it's almost always the ebook. But specifically in the case of Daisy Jones and the 6, I consider the audiobook to be a masterpiece, a work of art. And if you are trying to read at the beach with the sun and the wind and the sand, I do think an audiobook might be a better option anyway. Daisy Jones and the 6 is the story of a fictional 70s rock band that is apparently inspired by the real life band Fleetwood Mac, but I knew nothing about Fleetwood Mac or 70s rock, and I enjoyed the book anyway, despite all of the references that I didn't really understand. Because Daisy Jones and the Six is not really about the specific cultural context that inspired it. It's instead about the dynamics of seven very different people trying to work together to create music while also navigating their complex interpersonal relationships. This book is about fame, it's about addiction, and it's most of all about wanting the things that you can never have. And all of these events are taking place against the backdrop of the hectic, crazy, absolutely insane world that was Los Angeles and the Los Angeles music scene in the 1970s. Daisy Jones and the Six is structured as an oral history, a series of interviews with the various band members, and if you were to try to read the physical book, I can imagine that it might get a little annoying with how constantly the story is switching perspectives between this huge cast of characters. And I do mean constantly. There are many places throughout this book where the perspective literally changes in the middle of a sentence. But with the audiobook, this format works really, really well, because you have this huge cast of narrators whose different voices add so much flavor and enjoyment to the reading experience. In particular, I really loved the casting for the voices of Daisy, Billy, and Karen. I thought those narrators in particular did a really great job, but overall, Daisy Jones and the Six is definitely one of the best audiobooks I have ever listened to. Daisy Jones and the Six took me on an epic journey of rock and roll. It made me feel like I was getting a behind-the-scenes look at an actual band full of, well, self-destructive rich people. And by the end of the book, it also broke my heart, smashed it into little tiny pieces. And if you are planning to lie on the beach all day, then I definitely think you should spend it listening to the audiobook of Daisy Jones and the Six. By the way, if you can hear like little creaky noises in the audio, that's my headphones. My usual headphones are not usable today, and so I had to go search for another pair of headphones, and they work just fine, but they are also very, very old, so they are not in great shape anymore, and they keep creaking in my ears, and I would not be surprised if it is also creaking into the microphone. So, apologies if you can hear it, but unfortunately, today I really, really don't have much choice in the matter. So, beach read book number two in our gossipy rich people drama category is Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson. Pineapple Street is the story of the Stocktons, a New York City family that is 1% rich. Reasons why I think this book is a great beach read. It switches between three different perspectives, which means that your brain constantly has something new to engage with. It is 300 pages, but it is so easy to read that you'll be finished before you even realize it. And it is also impossible to take seriously because, as Logan Roy from Succession would say, these are not serious people. I mean, these are the kinds of people who unironically go to Russian oligarch parties wearing a low-cut gold dress, studded strappy heels, big Chanel sunglasses, and a leopard print hat. What in the early 2000s? And they also unironically throw a Mad Hatter's Tea Party gender reveal. She had transformed the Orange Street apartment into a psychedelic wonderland with teacups stacked in alarming towers, a candelabra with pocket watches hanging from the arms, playing cards fanned around the base, and porcelain rabbits peeking out from the floor arrangements. Sounds like an AI-generated fever dream. As you can probably tell, Pineapple Street is the definition of campy. Here's an excerpt. Oh no, I left my Cartier bracelet in Lena's BMW, and she's leaving soon for her grandmother's house in Southampton. That sentence is from the prologue, and the rest of the book is not quite as over the top, but if you are looking for a dramatic, feel-good book where rich people do rich people things and everything turns out okay and everyone lives happily ever after, then I would definitely suggest putting Pineapple Street in your beach bag. Okay, so that is the gossipy rich people drama category. And now let's move on to category number 2, which is gossipy thrillers. Like gossipy rich people drama, gossipy thrillers are fast-paced, easy to read, and don't take a lot of brain space to follow along with. I have 2 books that I think fit perfectly into this category, and book number 1 is In My Dreams, I Hold a Knife by Ashley Winstead. This book is basically a soap opera set at knockoff Harvard, where a bunch of terrible, terrible, rich and not so rich kids get together, cheat on each other, break up, and eventually start murdering each other, because this is a thriller, and what is more thrilling than a bunch of terrible, awful, selfish, unlikable people killing each other off so that the rest of us don't have to deal with them? Reasons why I think this book would make a great beach read. It's fast-paced and not too long. It's easy to get through since something dramatic is always happening, unlike actual college life. And since these are all terrible people anyway, it doesn't really matter what happens because it is impossible to actually care about them. The way I think of this book is the TV show Gossip Girl, but with more violence. And if that sounds like a fun time to you, then I would definitely suggest taking In My Dreams, I Hold a Knife to the beach. If you'd prefer a gossipy thriller with a little less violence and more likable, fleshed out characters, then you might prefer the other book I put into this category, which is Big Little Lies by Leanne Moriarty. The first time I read this book, a couple of years ago at this point, I remember thinking that if I were the kind of person to read books at the beach, then this book would be perfect for that. Because number 1, it grabs your attention by switching between the perspectives of 3 women who lead very different lives and all have their own dark secrets. Number 2, it's structured as a what happened type of story where you're switching between the present timeline where something terrible has happened and the past timeline where tension is constantly building up towards the terrible event. And number three, it is on the longer side at 480 pages, but it goes by so fast that you don't even notice how long it is. I will say that Big Little Lies does contain some triggering content, so definitely check to make sure you're okay with the subject matter of this book. But I consider this to be one of the best domestic thrillers I have ever read, and I think it would be a perfect book to spend all day reading at the beach. And now, let's pivot to a completely different category, because category number three is classics. I know that reading classics is not most people's idea of a fun day at the beach, but I am here to prove that classics can be just as fun, just as beachy, and just as easy to read as any other genre. I feel like I said that weird. Book number one in our classics category is a book that could also have easily gone into the gossipy, rich people drama category because in many ways, it is the quintessential gossipy, rich people drama book. And I am, of course, referring to The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Reasons why I think this would be a great beach read. One, it's short. It's only 224 pages. Number two, it packs a lot of story into those 224 pages. There's tons of drama and plot twists and even violence. And number three, it is a classic. So if you haven't read it before, you can not only cross it off your bucket list, but you can also show off your superior reading taste to everyone else on the beach. But also, in many ways, summer has always struck me as the most existential season of the year. Compared to winter, for example, which seems to go on and on forever when no one wants it to, summer is this golden moment in time that is most defined by the fact that it cannot last. If you go on vacation, if you go to the beach, there's this awareness in the back of your mind that it's going to be over in a few hours or a few days. And you have to enjoy yourself as much as possible because otherwise, what was the point of all the work and sacrifices you put in to making this brief moment of rest and relaxation possible? And The Great Gatsby, which does take place over the course of a summer, manages to perfectly capture the existential dread that is lurking behind all of the glamour and gloss and rich people drama. I was 30. Before me stretched the portentous, menacing road of a new decade. It was 7 o'clock when we got into the coupe with him and started for Long Island. Tom talked incessantly, exulting and laughing, but his voice was as remote from Jordan and me as the foreign clamor on the sidewalk or the tumult of the elevated overhead. Human sympathy has its limits, and we were content to let all their tragic arguments fade the city lights behind. 30, the promise of a decade of loneliness, a thinning list of single men to know, a thinning briefcase of enthusiasm, thinning hair. But there was Jordan beside me, who, unlike Daisy, was too wise ever to carry well-forgotten dreams from age to age. As we passed over the dark bridge, her wan face fell lazily against my coat's shoulder, and the formidable stroke of 30 died away with the reassuring pressure of her hand. So we drove on toward death through the cooling twilight. The Great Gatsby is a classic because it's fun and scandalous, but you also come away from it with so many thoughts on life and love and the meaning of life, and I don't think you can ask for much more out of a book. If you want clout, a good time, and also a mini existential crisis, then definitely add The Great Gatsby to your beach read book list. The other book I'm putting in our classics category is The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. As you can probably deduce from the title, this is a haunted house book, and in many ways, it's the classic haunted house book that still defines the genre even today. I think that reading this incredibly claustrophobic, very psychological, truly frightening book in a wide open space, crowded with people like the beach, is a really great choice because even if you don't tend to scare easily, I promise you there will be at least one moment in this book that will make you jump, at least one moment that will creep you out and make you very happy that you are not reading this book in the dark by yourself alone at home. Also, at 208 pages, The Haunting of Hill House is, like The Great Gatsby, a short book. So cross it off your bucket list, flaunt your superior taste, and have a really great spooky time at the beach. Category number 4 is, again, a bit of a pivot, because this time the category is historical fiction. I know most people think of historical fiction as being stuffy or slow-paced or boring or dense, but I have 2 books in this category that I think will change your mind and prove that historical fiction can be just as much of a beach read as any other genre. Book number 1 in the historical fiction category is The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell. This book takes place in Renaissance Italy, and it follows the short and tragic life of Lucrezia, the 14-year-old daughter of Italian nobility who's being married off to a rich, powerful, and much older man she's never met. And what makes this book so readable compared to a lot of historical fiction books is its structure. We alternate between short chapters that take place in the present, where Lucrezia has been taken by her husband to this remote hunting lodge where she's increasingly becoming convinced that he's going to kill her, and longer chapters that take place in the past, where we learn about her childhood, growing up in her father's palace, and the circumstances that led to her marriage. So even as we're being immersed in the atmospheric world of Renaissance Italian nobility, even as we're learning more about Lucrezia and becoming attached to her as a character, we're also constantly worrying about what's going to happen to her. We're constantly wondering when we can get back to that very tense present timeline. At 352 pages, The Marriage Portrait is a fast-paced, atmospheric historical thriller that I found difficult to put down and that I think would make a really great beach read, although I would definitely caution you to check the trigger warnings because this book does get both graphic and violent. Book number 2 in the historical fiction category is Island Queen by Vanessa Riley, which takes place in the West Indies during the 18th century. We follow the real life story of a biracial woman who was born into slavery, but who eventually overcame every obstacle in her path to become a formidable businesswoman and entrepreneur in her own right. Reasons I think this book makes a great beach read. One, the atmosphere. This book is set in the Caribbean, in the tropics, which makes it perfect for summertime reading. Two, it's epic. This is a book that spans decades and takes you all around the world. And number three, yes, it is 592 pages, which is a bit long, but the individual chapters are so short that it goes by really quickly, but also you can put it down anytime you want to do something else, which I honestly think is an ideal structure for vacation reading. I loved Island Queen. I think it's underrated. I never hear anyone talking about it, but it is one of my personal favorite historical fiction books. I will say it does have some very, very heavy subject material, some very graphic scenes. So definitely look into the trigger warnings before taking this book with you on vacation. And if you're looking for lighthearted reading, this is not that book. Moving on to category number five, we have nonfiction, because this is supposed to be beach reads for every type of reader, and I do want to sprinkle in a couple of nonfiction options amongst all of these fiction options. I have two books in the nonfiction category, starting with The Wager by David Gran. The Wager is the true story, obviously, of a ship named The Wager, which set sail on a secret treasure hunting mission only for the boat to shipwreck and the voyage to end in mutiny, violence, and just utter chaos. I had not heard of this historical event before. I was really, really sucked into David Gran's storytelling, and I was completely shocked by the ending. I was like, what? The Wager does take place on a ship on the ocean, which makes it a very atmospheric book to read at the beach. And at 357 pages, I think it's the perfect length to read over a 2 or 3 day long vacation. By the way, I think that David Gran's earlier and possibly more famous book, Killers of the Flower Moon, would also make a really great beach read. It is also nonfiction, but it is so tense. It honestly read like a thriller. Book number two in our nonfiction category is The Monster's Bones by David K. Randall, which is a nonfiction dinosaur book. Maybe it's just because of Jurassic Park, but dinosaurs have always given me major summer vibes, and The Monster's Bones is one of the most compelling nonfiction dinosaur books I have ever read. If I asked you to name the most iconic dinosaur, you would probably say the T-Rex. And The Monster's Bones is about the discovery of the first complete T-Rex skeleton. And what I really enjoyed about this book is that, yes, it is about fossil hunters and fossil hunting and dinosaurs, but it's also about the two very different men behind the discovery of the T-Rex. An idealistic fossil hunter and a privileged businessman who funded the discovery in order to make his museum a success. There's exploration, there's discovery, there's self-discovery, there's adventure, there's dinosaurs, and at 288 pages, I think that The Monster's Bones is a really great choice for a nonfiction beach read book. And finally, category number six, low stakes, chill books. Books that are easy to read, that are relaxing and don't require a lot of focus or emotional investment. I have two books in this category, starting with book number one, A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking by T. Kingfisher. And I know that this book is YA, but hear me out. A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking opens just like a cozy mystery, with our 14-year-old protagonist, Mona, discovering a body on the floor of her aunt's bakery, and this discovery launches Mona, a wizard whose only talent is baking, into a hilarious, fast-paced adventure that involves a mysterious assassin, a besieged city, and lots of animated, sentient baked goods. I had so much fun with this book. It made me laugh so hard. It pulled me right out of a reading slump. I did not want it to end. And I know that not everyone will have such a high opinion of this fantasy adventure. I'm aware that maybe I just read it at the right time in my life. By the way, I did read it on vacation, so it is a certified vacation-friendly read. But it is only 306 pages. It goes by really quickly because it is a YA book. And if what you're looking for is a lighthearted fantasy adventure story to read at the beach, then I really, really think you should try out A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking. Book number two in our low stakes chill category is French Braid by Anne Tyler. French Braid is a family saga book, kind of like Pineapple Street. It follows the Garrett family, but unlike Pineapple Street, it follows this family over three generations. And one reason I think it makes such a good beach read slash vacation read is that the turning point for this family comes with their ill-fated summer vacation in the year 1959. This is a book about a dysfunctional family, but it's not in-your-face dysfunction. It's very, very subtle. There's not a lot of drama, and yes, there is a lot of quiet unhappiness, but there is also a lot of happiness and self-discovery as well. What I really love about French Braid are the nuanced characters, their complex relationships, and the unique outlook that this book has on life, on love, and on family. I have never quite read a book like this. A book that is so mature and beautiful, and at only 256 pages, you can get through French Braid relatively quickly, and if you're like me, you'll get to the last page and almost immediately turn back to the first page because you just don't want it to end. I will say that French Braid is non-linear. It doesn't follow a fixed timeline, and that might make it a little difficult to engage with at first, but I would just suggest going with the flow, letting French Braid explain itself to you, and losing yourself in this chill, low-stakes, very relaxing family saga. And those are my beach read recommendations for every type of reader. Hopefully there was at least one book on this list that you thought sounded interesting, that you might want to take with you on vacation this summer or to the beach. And I hope you'll tune back in next week for more beach read recommendations, because next week I'll be discussing the 10 best mystery books to read at the beach. And before I wrap up, I'll just run through my beach read recommendations one more time. Book number one, Daisy Jones and the Six by Taylor Jenkins Reid. Again, I'm specifically recommending the audiobook. Book number two, Pineapple Street by Jenny Jackson. Book number three, In My Dreams, I Hold a Knife by Ashley Winstead. Again, Please check the trigger warnings on this one and do be aware it is full of people you will hate. Book number 4, Big Little Lies by Liam Moriarty. Check the trigger warnings. Book number 5, The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Book number 6, The Haunting of Hill House by Shirley Jackson. Book number 7, The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell. Again, graphic violence. Again, check the trigger warnings. Book number 8, Island Queen by Vanessa Riley. Definitely check the trigger warnings on this one. Very, very heavy subject material. Book number 9, The Wager by David Gran. Book number 10, The Monster's Bones by David K. Randall. Book number 11, A Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking by T. Kingfisher. Again, this one is YA, which I know not everyone will like. And finally, book number 12, French Braid by Anne Tyler. Those are my 12 beach read recommendations, and that's going to be everything for this week's episode. This has been the 2AM Book Review Club. Thanks so much for joining me, and I will be back next week at 2AM. Until then, have a great week, and happy book travels.